Hi everyone, welcome to Therapist Mom of Twins, my very own passion project filled with my journey as a new mom of identical twins and psychotherapist. I hope some of my insight as a child therapist and mom of twins will help provide ideas, support, and a few laughs for those of you with growing families. I try to keep things short and sweet because I know time is precious and I like to get to the point. Subscribe to my blog at therapistmomoftwins.com for updates. I want to throw in a disclaimer. I'm not a medical doctor, so no advice should be taken on here to substitute any medical advice from your doctor. Also, I'm not your personal therapist. Therefore, I'm not providing therapy to you. This blog and podcast is used to provide information, suggestions, and ideas to people seeking it. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited. I'm here today with a friend and colleague of mine, Allison O'Brien. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist, as well as specializing in perinatal mental health. Hey, Allison, how are you doing today? I'm so excited you're here.
Hi, Stephanie. I'm doing good. I'm excited to be here. Just super excited to be a part of your podcast because I've learned so much from listening to it and I love what you're doing for moms. So yeah.
Thank you.
Be a part of it.
Awesome. Thanks so much for saying that. That's so sweet of you. So today I just want to jump into a few things, including you had a really interesting birth story or birth stories actually, because you've got two little ones, and then kind of talking about some of the things that you went through with your kiddos, as well as bringing it back to today and what is going on, how you're handling, you know, stuff with the pandemic that's going on and how you're, you know, balancing the work, mom life and all that good stuff. So tell us a little bit about your birth stories. You have two little ones and share with us what you went through.
Yeah. So I have a 3-year-old and an 8, almost 9-month-old. And my 3-year-old is my daughter and my 8-month-old is the son. So with my 3-year-old, had a pretty healthy, normal pregnancy. It was a little tough at the end, like just being really big and uncomfortable and tired, swollen, you know, all that fun pregnancy stuff. But otherwise, like, really normal. And I got super into just, I know you remember this because we talked a lot about it and I shared a lot of like just gross information with you about birth. I remember you being a little freaked out about it at the time. Because this was like before either of us had kids. Yes. Yeah, I got super into like researching everything about birth. And I had an unmedicated birth with Morgan, my first. And it was a very long labor and a very long pushing time. And yeah, so during the pushing phase, Morgan was in the birth canal for a couple of hours, like while we were trying to get her out. And she pooped in the birth canal. And when she was born, she inhaled the meconium and popped her lung. So even though everything had looked like super healthy and normal up until that point, they realized she was having trouble breathing. And she was, like, at first I just knew she was being taken away to, like, get cleaned up and for them to, like, suction her nose and mouth and all that stuff. And then after I was moved to the recovery room, I found out that they had moved her to the NICU, and I got to see her that night, which was good. But that was really hard. Like, we couldn't hold her. I couldn't breastfeed her. She couldn't be in the room with us. Like any of the normal stuff that you kind of imagine for a birth, you know, and like newborn experience. So that was really tough. And we like just stayed with her every day as much as we could. And she was there for like the first week of her life. And then she finally got to come home, which was very exciting. Like, we were super pumped, you know, like ready for her to come home, but also terrified to bring her home.
Definitely.
As many NICU parents and non-NICU parents, I think, like, many parents are a little bit scared to bring their new baby home. But, you know, we brought her home, and being a therapist, like, I was already a therapist at that point in my life. I wasn't specializing in perinatal mental health at the time, but I kind of knew, like, okay, I'm going to have to deal with this trauma at some point from, like, being scared that she might not make it, seeing her, like, fighting for her life in the NICU and just, like, not looking good at first, like, not looking like she was doing very well, and being a little freaked out, you know, every time, like, her oxygenation levels would drop on the monitor and, like, stuff like that, you know, I mean, it's a scary experience. So I knew I would probably need to deal with that trauma at some point. But, you know, when you're, like, you have a new baby, you're just in survival mode, like, it's not really the time to start processing all your stuff. At least it wasn't for me, because I was just overwhelmed by trying to keep her alive and just, like, learn all the new routines and, you know, all that stuff. So, so eventually, like, later that year, I was able to go to therapy and start working through that and get help for that. And what I was surprised about, like, I knew the trauma was going to be a thing. But I actually also developed postpartum depression. I'm not sure if it was right away. I think it kind of gradually, like, got worse and worse over time. So I went to therapy, I dealt with those things, and then in my own healing journey, just started getting a lot of clients that were dealing with the same stuff, or similar stuff. Like, I've had a lot of clients who have had twins, and really struggled with that. I've had a lot of clients who've had losses, infertility, couples that are dealing with these issues. So I was dealing with my stuff. I was getting better. And then these clients were coming into my office with these issues. And I just started getting really into it and, like, doing trainings, just learning everything I could about how to help moms and dads. And yeah, so that's kind of how I got into this specialty.
Yeah.
And then got pregnant again later on. And luckily, you know, my daughter just grew into, like, a healthy, happy girl. Like, you know, we didn't have too many other issues besides just, you know, getting sick with normal stuff and having tubes in her ears or whatever. So that was not bad. And then I got pregnant with my son. That pregnancy was a little rougher, like, more nausea, just not really feeling too great, a lot of tiredness, which I know, I mean, I know from all my mom clients too, that, like, when you have a toddler running around, like, it's tough to be pregnant sometimes.
Yeah.
Just as much. Yeah. So, but everything was okay. Like, he was healthy. Everything was fine. And then I was very fortunate with him to just have a healthy birth experience. It did not go the way that I thought, as far as, like, having another unmedicated birth and stuff like that. I did have to have Pitocin and an epidural and, like, you know, those interventions. But he was born, and we got to do all the stuff with him. All the stuff we didn't get to do with Morgan. So, like, breastfeeding right away, that experience went much better with him. And he got to be in the room with us. All of our family got to meet him, you know, like, not through glass, but, like, in the room with us, which was really special. And yeah, so that was also a very healing experience for me to just be able to, you know, get a second chance and it go well.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so now he is 8, 9 months old almost, and we're just trying to figure out how to survive in this pandemic. So, you know, a lot of new issues have come up for us and all families with how to navigate the situation and everything. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you had quite the roller coaster ride for the first birth with your daughter, Morgan. And then, like you said, it was very nice, you know, still kind of unexpected, not exactly, you know, 100% the way you wanted it to go, but a much better experience with your second born. What would you say to moms out there who have had an experience like that, where they've had, you know, a birth where things did not go well, or, you know, had a NICU stay or things like that? Like, what words of encouragement do you have, or advice, you know, for moms that have experienced something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So first, I think it's very important to acknowledge and grieve all of the loss, because even if your baby turns out healthy and fine, and you're fine, you're healthy, like if things did not go the way that you hoped, and especially, you know, if there was trauma, if you were scared that you might not make it, or your baby might not make it, or babies. You know, any of those things that kind of come up that don't go the way that we hope. Because I think no matter what, when you're pregnant, you kind of have a dream of like how you want it to go.
Right.
Maybe not everyone, but I think a lot of people do. So like acknowledge and grieve the losses. Like if you are really sad that you didn't get to have an unmedicated birth, it's okay to be sad about that. It's okay to grieve that loss. If you are really sad that you didn't get to start breastfeeding right away and your breastfeeding journey like just did not go well, like it's okay to grieve that and be sad about it, you know, just like to let yourself feel all of those feelings, I think is really important. And to share that too with someone who can hear you and be supportive and try to understand your experience, I think it is a part of like just the healing process from all of that. One thing that I learned, especially after having my second baby, was like that was such a wonderful healing experience. Like I was thrilled, I still am thrilled that it went well and I got to do it that way. But you know, it can't take away what happened with my first. Like there will always be pain in my heart for her and for me and for my husband that like we didn't get to have that experience together. And I mean, it's I think can be helpful to have another experience that goes well, but there's always going to be, you know, that kind of scarred place from where it didn't go well, or it was really scary. So I guess just to kind of like, and I'm, you know, that may not be true for everyone. But that was true for me. And I think is has been true for a lot of the moms that I've worked with too. So just kind of keeping that, you know, expectation in check, I guess, a little bit, or like just being prepared that, you know, you never know how you're going to feel or what's going to happen completely.
I think that was great information, but also really brings forth that, you know, each baby, even if you have twins or you have one, or you have, you know, whether you have one child or five children, their birth story is unique to them and it's so special, and it's not something that you will ever forget, or you know, deserves to have its place in your heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting sappy here. yeah, so that I think that's, you know, a great thing to remember, and to, you know, remember that you can grieve those losses of even something that we don't think about as simple as having a medicated versus non-medicated birth. You know, what it, you didn't get to have, you know, things that you wanted on your birth plan that didn't go as, you know, as planned, or someone didn't get to be in the room, or, you know, taking into account all of those different things that go into a birth, and marking those equally is important. Now you, I wanted to, you know, if you're comfortable sharing, you had a difficult breastfeeding journey with your firstborn. Do you mind sharing a little bit of that and what you went through with that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. She, well, so I pumped in the NICU and at home, obviously. but I think, I know from my experience, they were very encouraging of like pumping in the NICU while you're near your baby, if you're not able to breastfeed them, for like the hormones and all that stuff. So I was still like dedicated to it and really wanted to do it. So I pumped and like saw a lactation consultant and all that stuff. But my baby was, she had a feeding tube and we weren't able to hold her because she had a chest tube in to help heal her lung, and like, it was taking out the extra air that had built up in her chest. So because of that tube, we really couldn't hold her, move her, anything like that. So so she had the feeding tube for almost the whole time that she was in the NICU. So I was pumping, and they were, they like have some interesting way of processing that breast milk and then giving it to the babies. I don't know what all goes into that, but I guess they pasteurized it. I don't know. So anyway, and then we saw a lactation consultant a couple of times. Like once she got the, once she was able to get the chest tube out, we were first able to bottle feed her. So that was really exciting, because like, even though I wanted to nurse her, like just giving her a bottle was something we hadn't been able to do for like 5 or 6 days. So that was exciting. So we started with that. And then before she was discharged, we saw the lactation consultant and practiced breastfeeding. And it seemed like she was doing well in the hospital, like latched on and took a feeding and seemed fine. So I was super excited about it. And then when we got home, it was just so difficult. and one of the things for my daughter, and I think that this might be true for a lot of babies who have to have feeding tubes in the NICU, she was not a very strong eater. So like breastfeeding takes some work, like nursing takes some work, you know, and she would just kind of wear out really quickly and not get a full feeding. So I felt all of a sudden like I was constantly feeding her, which was exhausting. And like I did some research, tried to figure it out, talked to the pediatrician, stuff like that, but it just, I ended up pumping and doing bottles for a while. And then once that just became too exhausting and overwhelming, I switched to formula, which was also not an easy road, because it turned out that my daughter had a cow's milk protein allergy. So that was part of her fussiness and like struggle early on when she was getting breast milk that we didn't know. And then when we switched to formula, it became very apparent that that was an issue, and she was able to get diagnosed and we got the right formula, and then things got better after that. But I think it's part of my experience was I was dealing with postpartum depression, and I did have that trauma experience. And I think just to normalize for other moms out there, like it's very hard to organize your thoughts and to make a plan and to figure these things out when you're depressed or when you're anxious or when you have trauma that's unresolved. And that was definitely part of what was going on for me. Like I think you know, my healthy self, like when I'm mentally healthy and things are going well, I think I probably could have figured out how to get through that or had more patience for it or reached out to more resources or whatever. But myself in that state, like, just had a really hard time organizing all of that. And I say that to say too, like, sometimes we have to forgive ourselves for stuff like that, because I have a lot of moms that carry a lot of guilt about having trouble with breastfeeding or not wanting to do it or not enjoying it. And so, yeah, and I did have a different experience with my son. He nursed much better and just like was a little pro at it from like right out of the womb. But I mean, it wore me out. It really did. And he wasn't a good sleeper, and it takes a lot out of a mom, I think, in a lot of cases. I know some moms love it and just like can do it for a long time and they're just, you know, get enjoyment out of it. I was not one of those moms. So I breastfed him for as long as I could. And it went well for, you know, 5-ish months. And then I said, okay, I'm tired. Like, I'm done. I want to share this responsibility some more with my husband, with his caregivers. So I decided to, you know, switch him over to formula at that point too. So
that can be such a hard decision to make. And when you finally decide to cut it off, it's, I know for me, it had a lot of guilt of kind of, I'm giving up on my babies, or, you know, I could just try to do this for this much longer. But like you said, sharing that responsibility, like, it, you have to take that weight off if it's too heavy. Mm-hmm. And I remember you, even with your first child, having a freezer full of breast milk that she couldn't take, and you had to just throw it out. And I always thought about that when I was breastfeeding my kiddos, is, oh my gosh, if I had to throw out a full freezer full of this milk, I would, I mean, you know, the saying, they say there's no crying over spilt, or don't cry over spilt milk, but like, if you spill breast milk, yeah, you need to cry over that. So, yeah, I remember you having, I remember seeing the freezer full and you telling me when you had to get rid of it.
Yes, it was very sad, because that's what, like, we found out she had that allergy. So, and I didn't know when I had eaten dairy, when I hadn't. So we had to just get rid of it. And I remember I kept it in the freezer. Like, it took up like tons of room in the freezer, but I could not bring myself to throw it away. I was like holding out hope, like, okay, how long can it be good for, you know, like 5 months, or don't quote me on that, I'm not a doctor, I don't remember the exact like time, but whatever it was, I was like, well, maybe in 5 months, like, she'll be better with this allergy and can drink it or whatever. But that was not the case. And eventually my husband actually had to throw it out, because I just couldn't bring myself to like take that action and get rid of it. So he did it for me, which was very nice of him. Yeah, that was sad for sure.
Which I actually, like, full disclosure, I don't know, this might be kind of strange for some people to hear, but I still have a bottle of breast milk in my freezer and that I cannot get rid of. I've actually found somebody through Instagram that they make little necklaces where you can like preserve the breast milk and wear it as a necklace. So I think when I can finally bring myself to defrost it, I will get one of these kits and make a necklace with it. But
you know what I like about that is that, like, it just represents to me anyway, like, part, like, becoming a mom, you know, like, it's like part of like the just process of becoming a mother, like, you're making that sacrifice for your babies and, you know, just struggling with all of these big decisions that you didn't have to struggle with before. And, you know, That's definitely really cool. I like that.
Yeah.
I had no idea that that was out there.
I found it randomly one day and I was like, I think I need to do this. It's kind of pricey, but I think it might be worth the investment because I don't know why I can't get rid of this bottle. And I stopped breastfeeding when they were 4 months old. So it's been there for a year. Mm-hmm. So anyways.
Probably because you worked really hard.
Yes, that was a process. So
yeah, pumping is a struggle and it's all a struggle too. And I think when I read things online, sometimes I think this decision gets minimized about switching to formula because it sounds like, oh yeah, just put them on formula. Mm-hmm. But it's really not that easy. Yes, first of all, there's the feelings that you have about even making that decision and quitting breastfeeding, and that's a process in and of itself to, let your milk dry up and wean and all of that stuff is the process. But then finding the right formula and getting your baby used to it and getting your baby used to bottles if they were used to nursing, getting them used to the taste of formula, finding something that doesn't make them gassy or cranky or vomit or whatever, that's a tough process as well. And I think we really should be more clear. I know it's simple for, I don't know, simple is the wrong word, but I know it might be maybe less complicated for some people, for some babies, for some parents. I'm sure that it's not always such a struggle to find the right formula and stuff like that. But for some people, it's really hard. It's like a really long process of figuring that out. So,
yeah, no, definitely. We had to try so many of them and I can't even tell you how many we did. And of course they're always like the ones for colicky babies and things like that. And it's hard. And then you wonder if that's the right one for them and you don't want to switch it too many times. And
yeah. How long do you give it until you say, okay, this one's not working?
Right. So
it's hard.
So you decided that this was going to be your second, but your last baby. Tell me a little bit about what went into that decision and what caused you to kind of go down that route.
This is so funny too, because this is a question that I want to know about so many moms in my life. But it's a lot of times you don't get to ask this question, but yeah, so, well, after Morgan was born and we were going through her newborn phase, I think I said what a lot of new moms say, which is I'm never having another baby. And then, things got better, especially after she turned one. And I know I have mom friends and people in my life who just loved the newborn phase and they love little baby phases and just all of that stuff. And I really struggled with it. I struggled with not knowing what she needed and trying all of the things and nothing working. And she was still crying. And I was like, what, what do you want? I don't know what else to do. And I struggled with feeling like I didn't have enough space. Because, babies, they just want to be held. They want to be close to you. They want you to play with them. And so that was a big adjustment. So once I started healing from my depression, healing from the trauma, and Morgan turned one and she started getting older and more independent. My husband always wanted more than one. So eventually I kind of came around to, okay, let's try for one more. And so we did, and luckily we haven't really had any issues with fertility or anything. We're very fortunate in that, because I know, you know, so many of my clients have struggled with that, and that's a really tough road to have to go down. So we got pregnant with Finn, our son, and I pretty much knew from even like when we were just deciding to try and get pregnant with him that I didn't want more than two. And I was just hoping that he was, you know, that we weren't going to have multiples that second time, because I didn't know how I would deal with that. And we do have some twins in my family. So, but anyway, he was a singleton, which I'm grateful for. And yeah, since he's been born, and you know, it's been a struggle with his newborn phase too. Like, I have overall, I think, been more mentally healthy, like in a healthier place, especially when he was a newborn and a little baby. I kind of had more of a like euphoric like, yeah, I just love him so much, and everything's great, and he's so special. And with my first, it took me a little longer to get to that place. It didn't happen right away. With Finn, it happened like a lot quicker. So that was nice. But the sleep deprivation got to me eventually. And, you know, it's just tough bringing up babies. So yeah, we decided. And also another factor, and I know this affects other people too, and I think it's tough in a career like ours, because you have to build a caseload and you don't get mm-hmm. to just like jump back in necessarily to a full-time job. You know, you have to build up to it. You have to decide where you're going to work and how many days, and you know, how many clients you want to have, and you have to market yourself and all that stuff. So a big part of that decision too was like, I miss my career and I want to be growing my career and just have that part of myself intact and able to have stability and growth and all of that. So it's been, you know, kind of each time that I've had a baby, it's been like start, stop with my work. So
I love that you bring up that work life balance of like, it's okay to be a mom and also want to get back to your career. Like, your career doesn't have to stop because you're a mom. Mm-hmm. But you can still have kids and have a career and, you know, find that balance.
Yeah.
So.
And to me, that's kind of tied into like decisions that women make about breastfeeding too. It's like who you are and your own health and well-being is important. You know, it's important for your partner. It's important for your babies. It's important for you too. Like, I think a lot of times we feel like we don't matter as much once we have babies, and we do. And I think that's part of the motherhood journey too, is like finding that balance and finding what you want for your kids and your partner and yourself as well, and like letting yourself have some room in all of that too.
That's so hard to find.
Yeah, it's been tough. And then pandemic situation has not really helped.
Yeah. How are you balancing one that's like running around like a little crazy person and then one who still needs you to transport him everywhere?
I am not balancing. Honestly, it's not a balance. Like, I wish it was. I'm trying for it to be. But we have, I mean, I will be the first to admit, like, we have done a lot more screen time than I would prefer. And sometimes that is just out of necessity because the baby needs me and my attention and my time for a stretch of time. And I need to have my 3-year-old occupied while I deal with him. And sometimes vice versa, like I need him to go down for a nap so I can help my 3-year-old with something. And it, he might not be quite ready, or he might be mad about it, but it's like, okay, buddy, sorry. Like, it's time, you know, you just have to lay down right now and hope you go to sleep. So yeah, I don't feel balanced. I know a lot of my clients are having a really hard time with this right now too, because all of the things that I usually talk about with my clients, like getting support and having help with the kids to give yourself a little more time to do what you need and want to do, like whatever that is, like if you want to do yoga, if you want to take a shower, if you want to take a nap or just watch trashy TV, like whatever it is, you know, that is very limited for, I think, most people right now. Mm-hmm. So that's been really tough. Two parents trying to work from home. Like, we have really struggled with that too, because it is just so tough to get work done at home with two little kids.
Yeah.
And to help support each other in that and try to give each other the time that we both need for work has been hard. So yeah, it's tough situation right now.
Yeah, I feel you on that. And I selfishly, like, and I don't know, people out there listening may think I'm an awful mom for saying this, but like, selfishly, I miss daycare. It gave me more of that time, like you were talking about, where I could do some yoga or watch some TV or take a nap. Now it's pretty much I work or I'm with the kids, and that's it. So it's really hard to find those outlets, you know, especially when my husband's working, because he and I can't switch off with the kiddos. So it makes it really, really hard to do, I guess, general self-care to an extent.
Yeah. And I know, like, I'm sure that this has come up for you guys too. My daughter's school, she goes to a Montessori school, and they, first of all, it was very nice to have childcare for her, for one thing. And before that, she was in daycare while I was at work. And both of those things have been helpful for me as a mom, but I think for her too, like socially and emotionally, and just like, you know, her growth and everything. But now it's really coming to my attention that she's three, and at school, they're so great at having this structure where they teach her things. She is learning all of these songs and, you know, letters and numbers and all these things. And she's learning all of these social skills and independent skills. Like, Montessori is very big on, you know, doing things for yourself and cleaning up after yourself after lunch and setting out your blankets on your mat and, you know, things like that. And so, and I'm, you know, I'm totally, I do those things, at some of those things at home too, but I am not a good teacher. Like, I'm having a really hard time working that in. And maybe if she was the only child, I would be better at like doing lessons with her with letters and puzzles and stuff like that. But it's hard for me to organize that in my mind. Like, when it's quiet and it's nighttime, I'm like, okay, tomorrow we're gonna do this, this, and this. And then when it's tomorrow, like, oh my God, like, didn't happen, you know, like someone had a poop blowout and that took like 30 minutes. And so, like, now it's time for nap, you know?
Right. Your plans just get destroyed.
Yeah. And I miss like having a place where I knew she could go and be safe and get all of that. And now it feels like the pressure is on me to figure out how to help her continue all of that. And I'm not that good at it.
So. You have that added pressure plus being with your son and working. And I mean, it's just piles up and up and up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And for my clients, I have been trying to help them strategize like any little thing that can help give them some sort of relief or reprieve. And also just talking to them about their thought process in all of it and how they can just kind of like let themselves feel what they feel, you know, have support from whoever they are at home with, talking to them about the struggle and all that stuff. But for myself too, like I have been, every night I do my mindfulness meditation, and I was not very good at doing that before. I've been like in and out of meditation. Like sometimes I'm into it and I do a good job with it. And then other times I kind of like just don't practice it. But I have been like for this whole entire, you know, stay at home quarantine business, like doing that every night before bed to try and relax and trying to give myself some grace about just not getting everything done, because right now that's just what it looks like, you know?
Right. Would you say that's the biggest thing, like giving yourself grace and space to accept that things just can't be the way we want them to be, and we're having to stretch ourselves thin? And
yeah, definitely. And I think too, like, this is scary. There's a lot of unknown. And I think sometimes when we try to push that out of our minds too much, it makes it an even bigger, scarier monster. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have to let ourselves feel the fear and feel the anger and feel overwhelmed and like, you know, anything that we're feeling right now, to just like sometimes let it be there. And I know that, you know, you probably talk about this a lot, you know about it a lot too, but like, you know, having some sort of container for that too, giving yourself, you know, 15 minutes to like really sit with it and be with it and acknowledge and accept it, you know, and kind of give yourself that acknowledgement that it's okay to feel this way. This is normal. It's normal to feel very anxious about all of this. You know, it's normal to feel scared. It's normal to feel really confused about what to do in a lot of these situations.
Right.
And so I'm trying to do that for myself too, as much as possible, but yeah, it can be tough.
Definitely. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about today or add to what we've already talked about?
I guess mostly just that, you know, if you are a parent or if you are pregnant or trying to get pregnant, if you're in any phase of this whole parenting journey and you're having a hard time, like, please reach out for support. Like, we're all doing video sessions. Postpartum.net is a really good resource. You know, like, just, it's totally okay to ask for help. Like, a lot of moms and dads really struggle during this period of life. And I think too, like sometimes, I know this was true for me and I'm a therapist, but like the first time around with my daughter, like I was depressed and I didn't really know it. Like I knew something was off. I knew I was struggling, but I couldn't really tell you, yeah, I have postpartum depression. I just knew that like I was having a hard time and it wasn't really getting better. And it wasn't until I started talking to a therapist that I figured out, oh, I'm actually depressed right now, you know?
Yeah.
So even if you don't quite know, or you just want to consult with somebody or just ask questions or whatever, I would just encourage everybody to reach out and, you know, find whatever support there is around you.
Which you did mention the postpartum.net, which is Postpartum Support International. And they have several online group support groups, but also I think they have, isn't it by state? Then they have resource people that you can reach out to by state, depending on where you are.
Yes, they have people that you can call in your area who can connect you with therapists, psychiatrists, you know, any kind of like mental health related services near you. And they now have a therapist directory on their website as well, where you can look for therapists that are nearby or that are doing, you know, if you're in the state, you can do video sessions with any therapist that's in that state. And I've actually found the video sessions to be pretty effective with my moms, especially. The support groups, there's been a lot of research showing the efficacy of the support groups and just how much they help moms and dads get through this stage of life.
Yeah, I think sometimes just hearing that you're not the only one who has either like what are considered scary thoughts or not the only one who doesn't enjoy having a newborn or says, I never want to have kids again, or those type of things. And when I hear other moms share that they feel the same way, like you kind of shared today, it makes me feel more normal. It doesn't make me feel like a crazy mom that's, you know, losing her mind or is a bad mom, or all these things are really, can be really normal with being a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely had those thoughts too. Many moms that I've talked to in therapy did not know that anyone else felt that way. Like many moms that I've talked to felt like they were the only ones struggling with being a mom. And a lot of dads, like 1 in 10 dads have postpartum depression too. So I don't want to leave out the dads either. There's definitely resources for them too. I'm glad that we're talking more about it. I hope that that continues so that it can be more normalized. Because especially like, yeah, it's so hard. And like, you know, the whole process, not getting enough sleep, not getting enough time to yourself, like not having enough resources to meet everyone's needs. Like it is, it's just a really tough time in life for a lot of people. And I know for sure, like social media and everything can make it look really good. And sometimes it is really good. Some people really enjoy it and have a great time, you know. But there are many people who, you know, can post a really cute picture but be struggling behind the scenes. So yeah, definitely look for all the resources. And if you want to read more too about symptoms on the website, like, you know, a lot of moms are surprised that they actually are struggling with OCD around like pregnancy and postpartum. But that is definitely a common thing that happens. And so if you just are concerned about like, should I reach out to a therapist or should I contact a support group or whatever, on postpartum.net, you can read all of the symptoms of postpartum anxiety, depression, OCD, or that stuff during pregnancy, you know. And that can be helpful too, just to kind of say, oh, okay. Like, yeah, maybe that's what I'm struggling with. Or maybe I should talk to someone because I definitely have a few of these symptoms going on or whatever.
Yeah. So. Well, that's a great resource for sure. So thanks for sharing that. And that again is just postpartum.net, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for being with us here today, sharing your story, being so open with all things mom. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.